Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 212 of the Mobilecast. We're still live at VMworld, although you all get it recorded. And I am lucky enough to be sitting here with Amy Lewis, who is VP of Influencer Marketing at SolidFire. Did I get your title right?
Director.
Director.
But thank you for the promotion.
Well, you deserve it. How's that? So Amy's been, we've been friends for a long time, and I want to bring her on here to kind of talk about how she uses mobile and everything else. But first, let's start with an introduction from Amy. Tell us about yourself.
Sure. So I'm Amy Lewis, and as Brian said, I am Director of Influence Marketing at SolidFire. I'm also a podcaster in my spare time on the Geek Whispers with Matt Brinder and John Troyer.
Yep. And you also have guested on Speaking in Tech. We've both guest hosted on Speaking in Tech.
Well, the running joke is I'm actually trying to take that over. So, you know, if anybody's got any tips.
Yeah. One thing you need to know about Amy is if you ever get her involved in anything, she does try and take it over. So, you know, soon enough, she may end up being the host of this one. Let's go back a while. So you started at Cisco.
I did.
And you were very heavily into using Twitter, using all the mobile tools. You know, you're on Instagram, you have your own Tumblr and all these pieces. And you're one of the people I've seen who's really used mobile to, you know, in your job, influencer marketing. And, you know, you're doing some, you were an influencer marketer at Cisco, right?
I was. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that was your time. I knew you were marketing. I didn't know it was influencer marketing. And you've used it for outreach, and you know, you ran VBacon, you had Engineers Unplugged, you did all these other programs with it. And what got you to grab onto mobile and kind of use it as a tool?
It's an interesting conversation, and I think it has a lot to do with being a remote employee. It's something Greg Nierman and I had had a lot of discussion about from Speaking in Tech. Funny that you mentioned that, because he's also not in one of the tech centers. Neither one of us live in a tech center. So I reside natively in North Carolina, and it's incredibly important for me to be able to do my job anywhere at any time. So a big part of influence marketing is getting to know the community, and it's great to be at these live events like VMworld. But obviously, one can't be at an event every day of the week and still, you know, have their kids recognize them in a police lineup. So, and to that point,
she's got experience there, folks. Don't when you see her, ask her about it.
So you've got to be able to use the tools to live where you are, and just like everybody's job these days, you don't want to be tied to a desk. You know, you need to be able to pick the kids up from school, run an errand, et cetera. And that's true for me at scale. So it's me using mobile tools and these various platforms to be able to scale reach across a virtual environment.
And what was the first tool you started with? I can guess, but I'm going to – where did you, you know, kind of glom on to say, this has traction, this is helping me, because you started way back?
Well – true story, full disclosure. So Twitter's probably my home base. But I started because I had a food blog. So I knew that I needed to use Twitter for work. But I'm actually a fairly late adopter. And as the fully converted R was quite a mocker, I think, of the tool. I didn't get it. I didn't understand what its purpose was. I didn't have a reason to be there. And so I thought, well, I've got to do this for my job. I started a food blog. I practiced with that so that I could do it wrong. And from there, it just kind of grew. So I started at actually Cisco Live 2011 was the first tech conference I'd ever gone to, and probably the first 10 tweets on anything of relevance in my life. And then the 2011 VMworld was the first time I actually ran the social marketing for a show. And you gotta be on Twitter for something like that, or you won't know where anything is or what's going on.
And it's interesting because I think that we tend to, you know, you and I run somewhat in the same circles. We tend to see a lot more of that interaction on Twitter versus, you know, people are using Instagram. They're using, you know, companies are now using Snapchat and all mm-hmm. that. But it's still, Twitter seems to be the big binder, I guess is the way to say it.
I agree. And I think there are different tools that gain some popularity. So there are things like Slack. And I know, my podcasting brother, Matt Brinder, is a big fan of that, but it's a little more private. I need for what I'm doing for influence marketing to be as public as possible. So I need as big a megaphone as I can get.
And so you started in 2011,
mm-hmm.
Cisco, you did Cisco Live, you did, VMworld was the first one you're in. What did you learn in the early days?
Wow, so much. Another name drop here, but Brian Gracely is one of my mentors, and he's the first person that took pity on me in VMworld 2015. So, true story, I was new to my job, and for those who don't know, VMworld is obviously in August every year. My boss was French. Anyone who knows anyone or has worked for anyone who is French.
I worked in a French company before I joined VMware recently, so.
You know what's coming. It's August. It's the time you prepare to go to VMworld, and you go on vacation. So the big boss goes on vacation. I'm in this by myself. I literally don't know what snack time is at a conference, when lunch is, how many days it lasts, when it starts. I've never heard of a Vodgeball in my life. All these sort of ancillary community events that go in hand with VMworld, not one thing. And so Brian Gracely took pity and said, all right, you're going to fail gloriously if someone doesn't jump in here, and just, you know, took me under his wing and explained how the world worked. So it was a trial by fire, but I had an incredible amount of support from him and some other folks who were working at Cisco at the time. And here I am now.
And you know what? It's amazing that it's a shout out to Brian, because I got started from the Cloudcast. I did some guest hosting for them, and they said, we want to do a mobile show, gave it to me, you know, did it as part of them, and then moved it off to my own thing. And, you know, I actually sat with Brian the other day, and we were talking about guests and all that. And we said, yeah, we may actually have him guest host every now and then, you know, see what we can do with that. But that's a very cool story. And in what's interesting is I know a bunch of people in Cisco, you know, Brett Belding's a good friend of mine. I know a friend of yours, and Twitter works for social influence. But, you know, back in 2011, 2012, what are you doing on Twitter? You know, I know you had the same reaction from people going, that's personal. That's home. What are you using this for, business?
Yeah, no, and part of it was tearing down the wall and saying an integrated work life, a mobile work life, is you got to take that wall down a little bit. Knowing everybody has their different level of privacy comfort, that's important, but you've got to be personal and professional in this space. So it's funny, all the names we're mentioning, these are people we don't live geographically in anywhere a connected space. So we only get to see each other in person and build those bonds, professional and personal, for a short burst of time. So the mobile tools and the platforms are incredibly important. It is the virtual golf course is almost how I refer to it.
I like that. I like that metaphor. How did you take that and get everybody in Cisco to buy in? You know, I mean, I'll tell you the story. I was tweeting a lot. You know, you and I approach Twitter, I think, the same way. We're the same person, home or at work. We only have one Twitter account. That's not true. We both have multiple Twitter accounts. We only have one main Twitter account that we admit to. But when you look at that, you must have people at work who said, what are you doing? I know. I'll tell you a story. For me, it was I had somebody who didn't understand how I was tweeting as much as I was, complained to their boss over in Europe. We were a French company. Came all the way around to my boss, who said, he's in the office 16 hours a day. If you add up all his tweets and that takes up even 8 hours of his time, he's still working more than you are over in whatever country you were in. But we were actually able to show tangible benefits of some of the things I was able to bring into Sanofi, where I was working and stuff like that. I'm sure you must have some similar stories.
Oh, gosh. So if you are known as Twitter girl, for sure, people are like, oh, you tweet for a living. And I'm like, I prefer short form copy. And that's honestly, it leads into the story. My title is a little unusual. It leads into the birth of influence marketing. So whenever you have social media as your title, people assume you're 20 years old and you tweet for a living. There's something about influence marketing that has a slight bit more gravitas. And it also invites people into the conversation.
And let's actually give a shout out to, you recently did a Geek Whisperers episode with Amy Hermes talking about influencer marketing. So, you know, equal opportunity. We should absolutely give you a shout out for that. People, you should go listen to that. I think it's about 3-4 weeks ago with Amy Hermes. And it was fun to listen to you to kind of talk about what influencer marketing means to you, because you have slightly different definitions.
Absolutely. She says it's not marketing. And if she were here, I would arm wrestle her, which is the running bet. She says she's not a marketer. I say she's a self-loathing one. Because she won't admit it yet.
And you know what? And I'll offer, just because I don't know that you'll put it on Geek Whispers, I'll offer to give you the mic and do a mobile cast and referee the two of you. Because I think it would be a lot of fun to watch.
The Battle of the Amys. But, you know, great example. Another person that I got to meet kind of through these virtual channels. But you're right. Like, it can be diminished. You have to find ways to explain how you perform these acts of marketing in traditional language, to map it back to what is comfortable and familiar. Because in the end, marketing really is about connecting with people. So I have 1,000 ways to sort of describe what we do, which is we're much more aligned with sales in some ways. So we are like sales without a quota. It is about taking people down the pipeline. So we are finding, and it's about raising voices that aren't your own, because people inherently distrust people talking about themselves. You need independent verification. So a big part of influence marketing is giving people platforms and outlets and all sorts of different ways to talk about you. Give them something to say, something positive to say about you, even if it's something negative. Make that into an opportunity for them to get an answer, an honest answer and a response, because we all know some of the best customer loyalty comes from any kind of a question or moment where you can win someone simply by answering and fulfilling a need in that moment.
So what was your background before 2011, before you hit Twitter, before you kind of came to this epiphany?
I'm a big Malcolm Gladwell fan. So everything makes sense retrospectively of how you're building your 10,000 hours, right? If we're thinking about outliers and how you
Absolutely.
Get to be where you are. I started in print publishing, of all things, which how does one make that leap from, an independently owned trade book publisher into a company of 60,000 people like Cisco? But I was doing social media before it was called that. I ran some bulletin boards, so fan sites, basically, for some of our authors. I built our websites from the ground up. I started in the mailroom, and I moved to a copy editing position, and then eventually became the person who was working on our website and developing our online presence. Mandated that we put the URL on all the books. And just these hilarious conversations you have with the clash of mediums in that time, right? Where truth story, they didn't want to put the name, they didn't want to put the URL in the book because they said people might contact us with questions that way. And we didn't have a way to support people contacting us online.
And that's a bad thing.
It was phone support. It was, again, traditional. You've got to think back. I'm not a spring chicken. So this is a while back before this concept of online. You don't even think about it, right? Of course there would be online support, but back then there wasn't. There wasn't infrastructure for it yet.
It makes sense. And so let's trace your path. You did the Cisco Live, you did VMworld, and to be fair, Engineers Unplugged came out of some of this. There are a bunch of things on VBacon here.
Yeah, we tried things. So again, big credit. Brian Gracely has a hand in all this. So my first kind of video debut, and it's a running joke, and I hope not too many people Google this, but Brian said...
Everybody Google this now. Let's be clear here.
Brian said, I've got some ideas. I know this is going to sound strange, but I need you to bring a few things to work. We're going to make a video series promoting... what Cisco's doing at VMworld in 2011. So if you look back, they're still up there. And it was the silliest list. He's like, you need to do 2 or 3 changes of clothes, a box of pasta, and some leg warmers. He's like, I'm bringing a stepladder. I'm like, okay.
I think I may have seen this, but okay.
And, point being is that people engage with information a million different ways. So if we think back to mobility, you've got to get people where they are, not where you want them to be. So we made videos that were completely tongue-in-cheek, silly videos to express the content instead of one more blog, one more list, one more sort of dry bit of marketing content. We kind of acted it out in sort of a ridiculous frame. And so from that, I became more confident about video as a medium to communicate. And Brian and I sat down and brainstormed one day, and from that, the concept of Engineers Unplugged was born, and the name hit me, and then we were off to the races. So we had, a running show for 4 years with 2 engineers, 1 whiteboard, and 7 minutes of tech.
And let's be clear, different engineers each time, people yep. talking about a different subject. I think the only thing in common is they have to do what at the end of each show?
When I ran the show, at the end of every show, you had to draw a unicorn. And one of those simple tricks of all the content, like you said, is different to provide continuity for the series. it followed the same format. And if you became inside the joke, if you watched regularly, you knew what was getting ready to happen. And for quite a while before the show kind of took off, people wouldn't necessarily know what was coming. So, you know, these well-trained, highly sophisticated individuals are being challenged to draw a kid's mythical object at the end. And it's a great leveling thing. And I discovered conferences later that people would come around and talk. It was like an alumni association. They'd be like, oh, my unicorn was terrible.
I'm still waiting for you one day to like make a flip book of just all the unicorn, you know, just take a pic, you know, grab a frame from the video at the end. And
well, when I left my job at Cisco, I bequeathed the crown to my colleague. So we are, at SolidFire have a new, you know, you always have to be inventing. So we have a new show called Pop-Up Tech Talks, which in this case is, and Brian knows I'm a huge, football, and that's the European kind.
We're going to forgive you that you're a Chelsea fan.
No, I know. I can't really say much after this season start.
We're going to forgive you that you're a Chelsea fan. you know, even we're a Man United fan. And yes, we still go out and drink and we do just fine. And to be fair, Amy has actually joined. We do an I Know the Score League where every week you pick the scores of the 10 games that are happening that week. And I think last week, Amy actually did quite well because the first 2 weeks she did not.
I'm on the up and up now.
She knows not to bet on Chelsea anymore. Sad to say.
But from watching football, for anybody else who watches a sport, when they do the after game interviews, I was sort of inspired by the kind of energy that comes from those after post game interviews. And there's always that wall of logos behind. And I kind of had that moment of, what if you did that, but an instant studio? And what better to do an instant studio than those pop-up banners that you think of? So you print what looks like a sports background, they call it step and repeat, of all those logos kind of scattered behind, and it creates a focal point. So very much a mobile thing. We have shot in hallways, anywhere there's power, I can take our video crew and we can shoot what almost looks like a studio or after a game shot. And so Pop-Up Tech Talks, I interview someone and kind of get what their excitement is for whatever event is going on right then. The pop-up part is like pop-up videos. We add that kind of mystery science theater, you know, commentary after. So that's a little bit crowdsourced. We invite community members to say, watch the raw video. And you know, they help elicit what we really were thinking, even if we were saying
some dialogue gets put in there.
Yeah,
then, you know.
Absolutely. It's a lot of fun.
So how did you move from, you know, you were comfortable in Cisco and we all like to get out of our comfort zone and challenge ourselves. What drove you from what you're doing at Cisco to SolidFire, other than to say it's a great group of people? You know, I know the people there, awesome group of people, but how did you move from one to the other?
Well, I mean, that's my career advice is always never run from, always go to. So Cisco's great place, great people. It was new challenges and potential for career development. So it was, and you've got to say great people. My two criteria for ever taking a job are great people and great technology. So if you have those things, everything else will work itself out. And SolidFire was willing to take a chance on a kind of very new wing of marketing, because influence marketing is anything but a traditional title yet.
And they're small. So to be fair, you know, this is a small startup company. That is.
Oh, I'd say we're medium, and
you're medium now.
We're pre-IPO.
Okay, being the influencer marketer you are, you get to choose the words you'd like, but it's certainly different for that type of thing. And it's funny because I'm actually starting to see more of that type of marketing.
Absolutely,
in the, as you would refer to them, pre-IPO companies.
Well, because you can't do it the same way. I think people understand. I adore traditional marketers. I couldn't be one if I tried. We recently kind of altered how our organization was structured. And so now I'm working with field marketing and events marketing and social marketing. So my bag of tricks has expanded, but we all speak the same language. The funny part is we found that we're the practical wing of marketing in some ways, and not to call the other side impractical, But
they are, is what you're saying.
No. But
I'm making fun of that.
It's book versus street. That's the other language I use. So if you're learning to speak Spanish, for instance, it's very different, you know, when you learn it in your high school class than when you go to Costa Rica and need to use it to order a drink, right? So it is it is the same kind of concept. I think we are applied marketing. So we're far more street marketing. We're very close to the customer. We work closely with the sales team. We really are hands-on, sleeves up. So we have the opportunity to take what the corporate marketing teams create and apply it and then give them the feedback. So it kind of makes sense, and it especially makes sense. It's almost like an agile development model. So it makes sense for companies that are young and growing and trying to establish themselves. We don't have the kind of large footprint. It's a different marketing challenge. So Cisco's got, you know, people know who Cisco is, and people are getting to know SolidFire. So that's a very different marketing challenge.
And it's interesting because I like your analogy there of street versus book, because it goes beyond marketing. Mm. It's true about tech. I mean, especially, I know the people you work with, but a lot of the people I work with, it's, okay, here's the documentation, here's how you install it, here's what you're going to do, and then they actually hear the customer use case, like, wait, you're doing what, and how are you doing? You're using our product to do this, and they're not necessarily ready to take that, and that's not a VMware thing, because I haven't been at VMware long enough to know all that, but at Sanofi, we work with a lot of vendors, and they look at us like, where'd you come up with that? Mm-hmm. And our goal was just to make it work because it was the right tool and finding out how to do that. What else do you use besides Twitter for your influencer marketing?
Sure. So it is, again, virtual and real platforms. So the virtual platforms, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, blog, Facebook. And interestingly enough, now this one I like because Facebook people often argue about. They say, oh, that's personal, not professional. But what we have found is that we make simple photo albums of pictures that we take. I take a lot of pictures. I document everything I can. It's serving as kind of a roving reporter. So if you can't be here, I'm going to try to give you the feel of it, right? Not just the brass tacks, because I think that's the other part of influence marketing is it is the softer side. It's a fuzzy thing. That's the part of brand.
Wait,
that
you have a softer side?
It's that part of brand that is hard to measure and explain, but you know it when you see it. You feel a way about Android or iPhones, you know? So it's just that secret sauce, that X factor, whatever it is. So we take a lot of pictures, we gather them into an album on Facebook, and it's been a really successful strategy because we kind of collect and curate so you don't have to. And it's a great way to engage the audience, and as far off from actual hardcore sales and pushing people to the finish line as it seems, that's what people matter. They go and they look to see themselves in the pictures. They remember a moment they had. They came to the SolidFire party. They, you know, it brings them into the moment with all of us. It levels the playing field. So Facebook has been one of our, and it's with people again, mobily, it's something people check in all the time. So we become part of the rest of the items in their feed. It's not for everybody. And if that's not how they choose to use Facebook or how they engage, that's fine. But if they have some professional and personal mixed in, then they're kind of seeing the more personal side of a company they have a professional interest in.
And to be fair, the other thing you need to know about Amy is you can't be around her without getting your picture taken.
I've often thought I need a shirt that says just warning label.
I'll take a picture with you wearing it. I'm sitting here at the table, and you know, I've known Amy long enough to know that she's always rocking a new battery for her phone. And so she's got her phone charging. Is that a 4S or a 5?
I'm a 5S, yeah.
Okay, so 5S. Yet. Why still a 5S? Because I've seen you go through a couple iterations. You've always been iPhone.
Yeah.
But I've seen you go through a couple
iterations. Oh, not always. I was BlackBerry at first, and then openly.
Yeah, well, we'll still mock you about being a BlackBerry. To be fair, the only reason she was probably BlackBerry is she loved the keyboard. She still loves the keyboard. If she could get the keyboard, she might go back to it again.
Okay, I do love the keyboard. I'm not going to apologize. But true story, and I think everybody out there can appreciate why you get a BlackBerry back in the day when you have the option is when your boss and your boss's boss have a BlackBerry and they encourage you that that's what you should get. Folks, what's the right answer there? Get a BlackBerry.
Well, to be fair, I actually sold some of the very first BlackBerries that came out many, many moons ago. So I actually have a museum of mobile devices at home. So I have some of the, you know, the first, the one that looked like a brick, then the very first, I think it was the 950 or 957 that came out, which was the first long one with a bigger screen.
Oh, I remember, I'll go way back. I remember the Palm Pilot, and I would be reading the New York Times when I was taking the train in from Brooklyn into my job on, you know, on Broadway. So, I thought it was big time, you know, look at me, I synced and now I can read the New York Times on the train.
So you have an iPhone 5S.
I do.
Which is always running out of battery more because of how much she uses it.
I'm a power user.
What other tools do you carry with you?
That's interesting. That's the most important one. I have not been a heavy iPad user. I have tried with a keyboard. I've done some other things. I do have a variety of podcasting gear. I have that's sort of the mobile stuff that I use. I have a Tascam digital recorder for kind of in-person, quick on the street. I've got a single mic that I can plug into a device. I carry a Yeti when I'm going to do multiple people in any setting.
Yes. So you and I are Yeti buddies here. And I am sure that you've had the same experience I have, that you go through TSA and every now and then they go, what is that?
Oh my gosh. I actually have just started another friend at SciPet from Speaking in Tech said, Amy, you're going to get the pat down every time if you don't just say, I've got a studio mic in my bag. And it's true. Those are the magic words. But the Tascam, the digital recorders, look like tasers. So I've also learned to say, this is what I have. I'm a podcaster. I carry AV equipment. Here's what it is.
It's interesting because what I found is Newark has gotten pretty well. They recognize it's a mic. SFO gotten better the last two or three times. A year or two ago, I was getting stopped a lot more with the Yeti.
It's the smaller airports. They have a higher level of scrutiny. And Heathrow. Pretty much, you just need to go in through Heathrow in a jumpsuit and carrying nothing. And then you might make it through.
You know, it's easier to walk through naked, but it's just not as much fun. So you have that. And I know, what else you carry?
That's pretty much it. I've got my laptop. So I years ago switched from, you know, the corporate PC to the Apple based just for weight. So I have an external hard drive when I need to power up, but I try to practice good digital hygiene. I clean, send things to the cloud and I actually don't carry my power brick much because, I'd rather have power for my phone than my Mac. And so my Mac will, survive through the day because my phone is in much heavier use.
No, which battery are you carrying?
I have, my favorite here is the Nutrient. I've had it for a while. I can get three or four charges, and I'm embarrassed to say sometimes it's a two or three charge day.
No, I carry around Anker. I'm a huge fan of the Anker product. So I actually carry around a Anker. I think it's about 12,000 milliamp hours, which is about five or six charges, or I can charge the iPad. And, you know, so we're recording the podcast right now, and I'm using a Yeti, which is plugged directly into the iPad at the moment. And it's easier because it's lightweight. I can do it. I can actually, in a pinch, I can run it off of the iPhone. So that works nice. And at home, what do you run? Because I know you don't use the Yeti at home.
I do actually use the Yeti at home.
I thought you said you used a Rode now.
I have a couple things, but I'm still pretty loyal to the Yeti. We're trying to figure things out. There are talk on the Geek Whispers. John is our audio geek, and I may be podcasting with a quilt over my head at some point if he has his way, because he wants us to sound like NPR.
Well, it's interesting. One of the things the issue that I find with the Yeti is it's so good it picks up everything.
It's true.
And, you know, it was one that I actually had to turn off the printer in my office when I was doing everything else. And so for home, I've moved to a Rode, which is on an arm, you know, looks like a desk lamp type thing on an arm. And it's got a vibration holder on it and it sounds great. Although I have a friend who said, well, we can put soundproofing up. And my wife looked at me and said, no, we can't. You may not put soundproofing up. It's a nice idea, but no.
You're going to podcast under a blanket now, too. Now you know. That's the mobile solution.
So the other thing that my buddy pointed out is on Amazon, you can actually get a soundproof wall baffle that will sit behind the microphone, which is actually cuts down a lot on the echo sound. And so do you actually edit any of the podcasts, or is that John that's doing that, or?
John and Matt split. So our division of labor is, I got the editorial role. So I am in charge of, working out the content flow with the guests, 9 times out of 10. It's kind of a running joke. I love information architecture. Again, that editorial pass. So it's 3 buckets. So I will always have kind of 3 topic areas that we'll transition through, but it gives us all touch points. And then I work to get the guests on the show as well.
Okay. So right now I do this all myself. It's kind of, you know, I was lucky in the beginning. Brian Gracely and Aaron Dell from the Cloudcast, they did all the editing. All I had to do was record it, take the raw audio, send it to them, and magically a couple of days later, you know, I'd do the liner notes and they would post it. And now I'm doing all the editing myself. I'm learning some of the tricks and trying to make it a little bit easier. You know, for me, I use Twisted Wave on the iPad. So if people are looking at what app I use, that's one of them. The Tascam is something that I'm actually looking at.
We've been really pleased because the other fun part about it is that we got one for the team and it's literally like you pass it around. And I started this at Cisco, the concept of a roving reporter and enabling people who may not have that background or that instinct to go out and gather content is incredibly powerful. So we have a couple people that I love working with in the office who one had a journalist background and she used to be a sports reporter in college. And so it just super comfortable for her. It makes sense. And then the person she's really partnered with is, you know, an incredibly technical engineer. And it was neat for him to have this device that's simple. You can quickly interview someone. And he found it was a great conversation starter to have longer conversations with people he's always admired. And it's just, we've gotten some really cool content because we actually do a podcast for SolidFire called Elements of SolidFire. And having that Tascam has been key to, you can ship it quickly. You can send it from an event to an event. And it's just been kind of a neat device. You know, it's got our podcast sticker on it. It's, you know, you're sort of holding, it's the hot potato. You've got it and you're charged with going out and creating something great.
So what piece of equipment do you wish you had, or whether it exists or not?
Oh man.
To make, you know, between your tweeting, your way you use mobile and everything else, what do you either wish you had that you know about or something that doesn't exist that you wish someone made?
Oh, wow. You know, I don't know, an iPhone with a keyboard. No, I'm just kidding. Brian's teasing me, but that way I can tweet more easily without falling down a well, like some sort of Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Let's be fair. You tweet while you walk, you're still going to walk down the well. It just means you can type while you're falling.
That's a good point. That's a good image. Ride the bomb down, right?
Dr. Strangelove.
Exactly.
So any tool or something you wish you could do or make easier for you?
The Tascam is great in terms of its ability to be lightweight, but it would be nice if we had something. I know people have got snowballs and other things. I would love something.
That's a mic, by the way, folks.
Right. I would love something that had the power of the Yeti, but was more lightweight, you know, and how cool would it be if we had phones or apps that had microphone sensitivity, ability to pick up at a certain radius, directional, but be able to carry it in my pocket.
So to be fair, I'm actually looking at something called the Mikey.
Because Mikey likes it? Is it Life cereal?
We're old enough to know that commercial. With neither of us revealing our age here. But the Mikey actually plugs into the bottom of the iPhone.
I've seen those. I didn't know what it was called.
And it's called the Mikey. It may be from Blue Microphone. That's one of the toys I'm looking to actually start playing with and see if that solves some of the issues of being able to walk around without a Tascam, something that's a little bit smaller and, you know, excuse the French, whip it out and just have that interview.
Yeah. No, you've got to have, that's the thing. You got to catch people in the moment because the key thing about being a roving reporter is being able to rove right alongside and sort of west wing it right with that person. So you've got to move with their schedule.
So with everything you do and all, you have 2 wonderful daughters. One's POTUS 20, 40. If you know Amy well, her daughter wants to be the president. And, you know, she reaches age in year 2040. And we had a running joke for a while because my daughter wanted to be president. I said, well, she's a little older, so she's got 2036. You know, we'll have to work on that one. But how do you approach social media and all that with them?
Well, that's a great question. It's interesting, and no irony here. The listeners will appreciate that my youngest, who is POTUS 2040, is – when she was six, she would say, "Mama, you know, take that picture, put it up on Facebook and tell me how many likes we get." So just the awareness. It's just
versus my daughter who says, "You can only take my picture if you promise not to put it on Facebook."
Yes, exactly. My eldest is my engineer, my mathematician, and that's far more, you know, her approach to things. So they know what mom does for a living. It's an integrated part of our lives. We take selfies that are kind of ridiculous. We have a world tour, series where we go, we like to travel and we'll photobomb various, monuments, statues, et cetera. So they participate. Obviously, we're talking about them with their kind of, handles and not their names. So some of my choices are, I never use their real names in public. So unless you know us.
My daughters have never had their real, I tend to call them number one and number two. I got in trouble when they actually saw me do that one time and said, "I'm not thing two."
So, you know, a lot of us in technology, I think, have sort of made that choice that I feel like my girls have the right to join social media in their own way, in their own time and under their own rules. So I want to make sure that I haven't created such a social footprint for them, for good, for bad, for worse, that it's hard to dig out of. And we're in conversation. So they are not 13 yet. So we don't have a series of various platform accounts for them yet. I haven't been pushed really hard on it. I think the youngest will push before the eldest. That's birth order at work in some ways and personality in others. And
personality is a big, you know, the younger one learns a lot from the older one, but also wants to be independent. And
absolutely. And you know what? I think they learn quite a bit from, I'm pretty open about things that I do, mistakes that I've made, what good choices are, and why I don't use their names in public and why I don't share certain information online. And so I think it reinforces what I know they teach in schools. And I'm sure we all as parents repeat ad nauseum, you know, don't share personal information. Don't say things or do things that you can't take back or undo. You know, I live that and I'm very honest and repetitive about it whenever we talk about it.
And what's their reaction?
They get it. Again, they'll look over my shoulder. We'll look at Twitter together. We'll look at Facebook together. Instagram, I think, is the one of real interest. They know what I do in these other channels, but Instagram, I think, it's what the kids these days look like. It's what my eldest is most interested in. And some of it is fun to manipulate photos. You know, I think the idea of having a tool that's that powerful and you can express your creativity, it's an age of kind of being super self-aware that I think that's an irresistible combination. So I think Instagram, I know a lot of other kids in that age range, that's got extreme appeal.
Now, do you let them on Instagram since they're not 13?
No.
So you had the same rule we did. You didn't. And it always killed my kids because, you know, their friends' parents, they would sign them up and put them on at 9, 10, 11. And they didn't get Instagram. They didn't get Facebook. Both, you know, my oldest one just started college. So they're both past 13, but you know, that was the rule in our house as far as Facebook and that. So,
and you know, I had another colleague who's in social media and did it the way I really respect, which is she had a partner account with her daughter. So she made it clear that it was the two of them together and sort of a tethered. And as she showed responsibility, then it would become separate. And I thought that was a really cool
approach.
That's
a great idea.
Yeah. So two people were able to log in. And, so, you know, that's an absolute way of, and just again, tethered.
Well, for, you know, for us, it was, even when they were old enough, we got all their social media account passwords.
Chargers, you know, you keep the ability to charge and you keep the passwords and maybe even the Wi-Fi password and then you're good.
So we're almost out of time, but let me ask, and let's start from the personal and then we'll go professional. Your kids ever look at you and say, "Mom, stop tweeting," or "No, we don't need this picture on Instagram"? You ever get that from them?
I'm pretty self-regulating at the house. So I have to say in some ways it's been the opposite. And this is going to be a really weird story, but hang with me. So when I was a more active food blogger, I submitted and won the right to be the deep fried ambassador for the North Carolina State Fair. True story.
Did it come with a sash?
I wanted the sash so badly, but they told me.
All I know is I want a picture of you in the sash. Okay.
Well, I will send you a picture of me with the representative from the North Carolina Pork Council. So I'm there with a large pig mascot. That's probably the best picture. But you would think, okay, this is a trip to the state fair. The girls wouldn't want at all interrupted with the ridiculousness of social media. But it was the reverse. They still talk about that because we actually, I wrote a note for them to get out of school because it'd be so crowded and I wanted to take them on an off day. I got 2 press passes. I got parking, like front door parking. I was going almost every day to cover the fair. And so I took them with me on what I knew would be a slow day. They still talk about it. So it, the reverse has been, to your point at the beginning, like I've had the good fortune to be able to use these crazy tools to create a niche, a career path, one that I never would have been able to do just being a remote employee, your typical remote employee, or if I worked locally. It opened up doors for me like nothing else. And that's what they see. So they really see this in its proper context of you're present when you're present, but it can be an unbelievably powerful tool. And they kind of have a little bit of pride in that we do things a little differently in this family. And, you know, it's been an interesting thing. So no, actually they've.
Well, so that's awesome. So let's turn that around as the last question. Do you ever get people at work saying, stop? No, let's see. And I know you have to every now and then, but.
Solid Fire is a wonderfully supportive environment. There are, one of the fun questions I got was, you're a prolific tweeter. I just had to unfollow you. And I said, that's the right choice for you. It is never not okay. There's no corporate law that says you need to follow me. I'm using these tools in a particular way for a particular reason. If you only follow 5 or 6 people and it's not what you're into or about, like that's appropriate. And sort of setting those expectations that that's completely fine and rational. You should only go into social and use platforms because you have a reason to be there, not because someone told you to.
100% agree.
Yeah. So it's,
and teaching them about list is another good thing to, what, don't follow me, put me on a list when you're at a show. You know, you want to see what we're talking about. Great way to see it type thing versus you don't have to follow me and see every tweet that I tweet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I'm in the good fortune that this is my job and people sort of accept it. There are always going to be doubters. And for me, that's a wonderful opportunity. My colleague and the voice behind @SolidFire, Mike Turner, jokes that, his hashtag for me is cattle prod. He said, I'm the cattle prod of the internet. So if you're not engaged in social, that you will be after 15 minutes in my presence.
Yeah. And sometimes they think the Yeti is a cattle prod, but that's a whole other story. So thank you. Thank you for giving me the time. I know you need to run in a minute, but really appreciate it. And another shout out for Geek Whispers and go back, look at Engineers Unplugged, the old ones, kind of fun. Catch up on some of the Solid Fire, very cool videos because if you haven't seen them, they are fun to watch. You know, kind of like riff tracks for engineers. And thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And listeners, great. That was episode 212. We got at least one more coming from VMworld. And we will catch up with you soon.